Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, February 17th, 2015. And with me today, I have my brain trust. Now, I know I've said that before, and you guys are like, no, really? But yes, really. Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Thanks for making the time to be here. I do appreciate it. And Brian Chaffin, how are you?
If I'm here, I am good.
You are here, and I'm so glad that you're here. And as always, it's great to have you here. It's also great to have lynda.com as our sponsor this week, and I'm excited we'll be talking about that soon. But first, Brian, you gave us, I think, a really great segue into what we can hop into while we still have a good connection with you. And this is your Wi-Fi problems.
Oh, so, yeah. Good point.
Yeah. So the deal is Brian's having some Wi-Fi issues. And as we started to kind of like try and figure out some troubleshooting for this, it occurred to me this would be a really good thing to put on the show because there's probably a lot of our listeners that are pulling their hair out, figuratively speaking, trying to figure out exactly why they just have a bad network connection. And so I figured we could work through some of that on the show for our listeners.
Well, and I happened to know what.
Okay, now here's the wonderfully, beautifully ironic part about that. Just as Brian starts to explain what the problem is, his network connection becomes an issue.
Yeah. So thankfully, we had a pre-conversation where we at least learned a little bit about what's going on. So I'll take the handoff that I think Brian was trying to give me, because it's like we're bringing Mac Geek Gab here right to TDO's center stage today, which is awesome.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So Brian's issue is that he's got, as you're hearing on this Skype call that he's on, he's got a Wi-Fi connection or a network connection that goes flaky. Now, his assumption, and we'll operate under this assumption now until proven otherwise, but the assumption is that the internet to and from his house is fine and that the issue is inside his home. So he's got a cable modem connection in his house, and that cable modem is plugged into a current generation Airport Extreme. Mm-hmm. So that's a great quality router. It's not my personal preference just because it doesn't have a lot of flexibility in terms of its features, but in terms of being a router and a Wi-Fi access point and all of that, it performs very well, and in fact, it's right up there with all of the other, you know, 1750 based speed routers. So certainly you get far enough away from a Wi-Fi router and you're going to have problems, but that one's as good as you're going to get in that price range these days. So to connect him to that, he's got an old time capsule, possibly first generation, certainly second generation at best.
That always sets off a red flag for me.
Yeah, and it should. So he's got that connected as a wireless client, effectively a wireless bridge to the Airport Extreme. And then he's plugging his computer in Ethernet into that, which is not, if you're going to do a wireless bridge, that's actually not a bad way to go, because at least you're not then echoing the Wi-Fi signal and sort of dealing with one router doing double duty. You're letting the time capsule to specifically just get the wireless data, and then you're passing it to the Mac via Ethernet wired, which is fine, except that the wireless circuits in those first and even second generation time capsules were horrible. Very, very horrible. So I'm guessing that that's what his problem is. He can test this, though. We put an article up today to make this timely. It was a spinoff of a Mac Geek Gab segment that we call Mac Geek Gab Answers, this series of articles. And Jim Tanis, MGG Jim, as we like to call him, he wrote up how to test your network speed with a free utility called iPerf. I'm not going to go through any of it here. You can read the how-to. It's brilliantly written. It's very clear, and it will show you how to test your network speed.
And yes, I'll have a link to that in our show notes.
Awesome. Thank you. So I think Brian's first thing he should do is test that going back and forth just to get a baseline of, okay, where he is. He has a couple of power line adapters that I think are going to be his solution.
Now, for those that don't know, what's a power line adapter?
Yeah, so power line, what it does is it allows you to essentially tunnel an Ethernet signal across your power wires. You get a box. Actually, you need at least two of them to make this worth anything, and they're typically sold in pairs. But you can have multiple. You can have six of them, I think. You could certainly have three or four. It's a box that plugs into your AC outlet and has an Ethernet jack in it. And configuration is exactly that difficult. You plug it into AC power, you plug Ethernet in, and then you plug another one into AC power. And as long as it's in the same house, it doesn't need to be the same circuit, but it needs to be somewhere in the same circuit panel. That's close enough for you to get a signal. Now, how much of a signal are you going to get? Somewhere between, probably on the worst end, maybe 50 megabits per second, which isn't that great, up to, I've heard of people getting 300, 350 on the units that will go up to 500. In my house, I've tried units that do, that'll max at 200 and at 500, and they both do somewhere in the 100 megabit to 150 megabit range, which isn't horrible. Technically slower than the fastest Wi-Fi that we have at 802.11ac.
But your Wi-Fi is so bad that you keep dropping off your network, it's faster than that.
You got it. That's right. Yeah. So you know, combine some power line stuff with this iPerf thing that Jim wrote up for us today, and hopefully Brian can figure out not only where his problem is, but what his solution is, and hopefully that helps you too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Now, if someone needed to do a little bit of, let's call it Wi-Fi snooping, sniffing, just to see what other networks are around, do you have a favorite app other than telling someone use iPerf to look at your own network?
Yeah. So you can – right. So the one problem with Wi-Fi networks is if you have neighbors that also have Wi-Fi networks, it can cause a lot of interference. Two things about that. On 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi, you definitely want to only be on channels 1, channel 6, or channel 11. You don't want to be on anything in between, even if all of your neighbors are using those channels. And the reason is those are the only discrete channels that exist, meaning those anything in between will actually overlap with one or more of those. And routers are built to sort of share with other devices that are on their same channel. So yes, if you and your neighbors are all using the same channels, yes, you will be slowed down a little bit, but interference will be less of a problem in terms of actually maintaining a connection. So you want to use channel 1, 6, or 11. But to find out which one is going to have the least amount of neighborly traffic on it, you want to be able to scan and take a look at what channels are in use and what aren't. My favorite Mac app for doing that is an app called iStumbler. It was written by, and still is written by, a guy named Alf Watt. It is now a for-pay app. For years, it was free because Alf worked for the Fruit Company. He, in fact, designed and worked on the team that designed the software and I believe even some of the hardware for all of Apple's wireless circuitry. So you get to have an app that was used and written by the guy who designed the stuff in your Macs, or at least designed some of the stuff in your Macs. He's no longer with Apple. He left a couple of years ago. But that's why I like that tool, because he really has a fundamental understanding of kind of the hardware and stuff that's in the computers that we have. If you want an app for your iPhone, though, unfortunately, Apple doesn't allow third-party developers to get direct access to the Wi-Fi circuit, so they can't pull it and tell you what it sees. But Apple can, and Apple wrote a utility, and they hid it inside of AirPort. Of course they did. They hid it inside of AirPort Utility. So go to a Get AirPort Utility. It's free from the App Store. And then go into the Settings app on your phone, even if you already have it. Go into the Settings app and go to the settings for AirPort Utility. At the bottom of that list, you will see a setting for Wi-Fi scanner that is disabled. Turn it on. Now get out of the Settings app and actually launch AirPort Utility itself. Inside of AirPort Utility, you will now see a little blue button in the upper right-hand corner that says Wi-Fi scan. Launch that, and then in that same spot, hit the scan button, and your phone will start displaying a list of all the Wi-Fi networks it sees, with the more powerful ones at the top. They list their channels, so you can go through this list and figure out which ones should and shouldn't use at home.
So totally easy way to go and look at all those networks. Not quite as useful from a visual standpoint as, say, iStumbler or Wi-Fi Explorer.
Correct. Yeah, but that's right. Yeah, it's not pretty, but it's functional.
Right. And for what some people need, that's going to be enough. For everyone else, excuse me, there's iStumbler and Wi-Fi Explorer.
There you go. So hopefully that helps you, Brian.
Hopefully it does. It's very handy having a networking and a computer guru, you know, like in the same company family here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we all try to help each other. That's how it works.
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. And that's totally awesome. And I mentioned earlier, we have a sponsor this week, and that's lynda.com. And if you're not familiar with lynda.com, well, it's about time for that to change. Lynda is an online source for training, and it's self-paced. So you just go in and sign up, and you can take classes in pretty much whatever topic you can imagine. They have classes on networking, as a matter of fact, and coding for all different languages. So you can go and learn Swift coding if you want, or C++, or many other languages. And if you're into website design, no problem. They've got you covered there. They have page layout, photo and image editing, video editing, and all kinds of business classes. So pretty much everything you would need to learn how to do what it is you want to do and then turn it into a business, you can do all of that from lynda.com. And they want to make sure that all of our listeners can get smarter throughout 2015. So they're offering all of you a 10-day free trial. And to take advantage of that, you just need to go to lynda.com, and that's lynda.com/TDO, and you can sign up for your 10-day free trial. And during those 10 days, you can watch as many videos as you want, and no limits at all. And one of the things that I do love about the way they've put their video courses together is that they're in small segments. So you can go, and if there's like a specific part of one class that really focuses on what you need to know, go and watch that. So you don't have to watch things in order. You can learn at your own pace and whatever order works best for you. And all of these classes are taught by people that are the top in their industry. And it's really great. So thank you to Lynda for being our sponsor this week. And head over to lynda.com/TDO and get your free 10-day trial and start getting smarter in what year is this? 2015.
2015. Yeah, I have Up and Running with Bash Scripting is the next course that I'm going to take here. I do a lot from the terminal, but I do very little in terms of scripting what I do from the terminal. And so that's the next one up for me. So I'm stoked about it.
Very cool. Very cool.
That is cool.
So, all right. There's another thing I wanted to take a look at today before we wrap up. And this is the news that's leaked out. And Brian, you mentioned earlier you think controlled leak, and I'm totally with you, that Apple Watch was supposed to be so much more at launch than it's going to be. In fact, based on the information that's coming out, Apple Watch was supposed to be a health tracker, not a fitness tracker.
And yeah, you know what? I got to step right there. I wouldn't call it more. I would call it different. It's a completely different
all
thing.
Right, that's okay. That's a totally fair statement. From my perspective, based on the information it was supposed to collect, that's why I chose more. But that's really an accurate way to look at it too, that it's very different. Because the Apple Watch we're going to get in April is not a health tracker. It is a fitness tracker. And the difference, because for some people, this is a very vague line. But for me, it's very clear. And I'll explain to you why it's clear. A fitness tracker keeps a log of how many steps you've taken, maybe how many calories you've burned, the flights of stairs that you've climbed, how far you walk in a day. It can, in many cases, track your sleep patterns and then link up to something that lets you keep a log of what you've eaten so you can match up calorie intake to calories burned, things like that. A health tracker is or it can look at those things, but it's also going to be looking at what is your heart rate, what is your blood pressure, what is your glucose level, what's your blood oxygen level, how stressed are you, and it's going to be looking at things that fall deeper into the medical realm than just simply are you being active today. And the Apple Watch concept was supposed to be that more medical side originally. But it turns out that Apple found that the sensors they wanted to use weren't giving consistent results. Like maybe someone wore a watch tighter than someone else, and because of that, they got different results.
Dry skin, hairy arms.
Right.
There were all kinds of factors that were actually resulting in different kinds of data, and that's bad.
And that's really bad, especially if you take into consideration that some of the data that Apple was looking at collecting could potentially fall under Food and Drug Administration regulations.
Yeah, you can't do that stuff wrong, because there will be cases where people's lives will be at stake.
That's true. It's not hyperbole to say that if you collect this data wrong and interpret it wrongly, that people could die.
You know, I might take us on a long tangent or a short tangent here, but this is an interesting thing, right? Because we've got a lot of technology being developed that will give us data that we haven't previously had, right? Or at least haven't previously had in a regular way, that could, when you interpret this data, you could then make decisions about your health. And because we've never had this data in this way before, we don't know how to interpret it appropriately. I mean, I look at a lot of these, like the things that are tracking concussions, or rather the things that are tracking head impact during like youth sports or really any sports. This is data that we've only really collected in the past in very limited ways, but now we've got lots of kids wearing helmets that track impacts over time, or you know, we saw at CES, we saw a mouth guard being used to track this stuff. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing I think that could happen is for the FDA to actually get in the way of that stuff, because what needs to happen is that these companies need to present this stuff responsibly and say, here you go, we've got the technology to measure this impact. Now, what we don't know is at what point this is a bad thing for the athlete, or, you know, an okay range for the athlete. We kind of need to learn that together. But what I would hate is for the FDA to just shut it down and say, well, until we have the answer to what is the right parameters and what's the right range, you can't sell this to people and you can't get this in the hands of people. And I get why Apple would make a decision on their own about this, but this whole fear of FDA, I think, is a bad thing, and I'm hoping that it's not actually what's happening, and I hope it's just simply the person who wrote the article was reaching. Go, Brian.
It's okay, Brian. You're wound up. Go.
To say that you're worried about the FDA getting in the way of that is to ignore the reality that the part of the FDA's job is to not only protect us from quackery and dangerous technologies and or drugs, but it's even to make sure that everyone's playing on the same field. So, like, if helmets are saying that they're reporting, for instance, impacts,
yep,
yet they're not, that's the kind of thing that the FDA needs to be involved in.
Oh, so that's true. Yeah,
I get really uptight at this notion that the government just needs to get out of the way of capital here, because capital always screws us when it comes to this stuff.
Oh, see, well,
always, okay. Every single time they can, they do.
Well,
not every player, just some people, sorry, some companies.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Well, I'll go back to these helmets, right? Because they actually exist, and if the helmets are consistently reporting the same amount of impact the same way, then that, I believe, that's what the FDA should, and even without the FDA, that's what these companies should responsibly make sure, that every time there is an impact like this, it reports it like that, right? And so we've got consistency in reporting, and that's what we need to just get out there And then we kind of need to, you know, do what we've always done to protect athletes and kids and all of that stuff. And then kind of look back at the end of a season and say, okay, who was it that actually got concussions this year? Okay, it was, you know, these three people on this sample of 100. Okay, now let's compare their data across the season or across that game or whatever it was with everyone else's who didn't get a concussion. And now we can learn where we should be, you know, what, where's that warning level of, okay, this athlete should be pulled off the field because one more hit and they're going to risk this, you know, concussion realm. But we need to be able to gather that data and we need to be able to look at it. So I agree with you. The FDA and the company, the companies who are doing this and the FDA, is their job. It's their job to make sure to hold them to it, should be reporting consistently, but to stop people from doing that because we don't yet have the ability to interpret is where I feel like we don't want to go.
There's nothing, excuse me, there's nothing stopping anyone from putting an accelerometer on their helmet.
Right.
And basically that's what you're talking about. These helmets have accelerometers.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, but is the FDA going to get in the way of that if you say, I'm putting this in here so that we can learn more about concussion detection, right? I mean, as soon as you factor health into this, does that then become, you know, at what – under – where does the FDA's purview begin?
Well, and what is to stop a – what's to stop a company from interpreting that data in a way that they see fit? What's to prevent five companies from interpreting that data?
Well, we have no idea.
Again, the FDA plays a very important role there in how all this, how all of these technologies, these new technologies in particular, are going to be playing together, and the way that they're going to be marketed, and the way that the claims that are going to be made about them.
Right, but if you're – there's a difference between saying we're giving you this. You have the ability to interpret this any way you want, but you know all we can do is make suggestions because we really don't know. That's – I mean that's an honest and responsible thing versus a company that's – and even once we have that data, you know, that same company or any company comes out and says, okay, here's the right way to interpret it. That should be – you know, peer reviewed, and the FDA should definitely be involved there, right? Mm-hmm. But what I worry about is, you know, and maybe with Apple it was that the sensors weren't being consistent because people weren't wearing it the same, you know, a tightness or whatever. But as soon as the sensors are consistent, I would hope that the FDA would not try to get in the way because we don't yet know how to interpret this data. Again, as long as the companies are being clear about the fact that we're just giving you the ability to collect data. That's it.
Yeah, but a lot of the things that Apple was trying to build into this are not they are known. Right? We know how to interpret EKGs. We know how to interpret oxygen in the blood. We know how to interpret glucose in the blood. Right? So I mean that's actually
yep, that's right.
So for Apple to be worried about needing FDA approval for this stuff is pretty reasonable. It's pretty reasonable for the FDA to have a say in it. It's also pretty reasonable for Apple to be worried about that.
Yeah, I'm not right. If Apple's were again, and I think this speaks more to them not being able to consistently measure this across a range of user types versus data that we haven't really been measuring on people in a broad way. And I would, like I said, I just hope that, you know, that innovation is left able to happen.
Well, I think Apple's in a very good position to address FDA compliance concerns because they hired the person that makes this happen. I just forgot her name, but they hired a woman a couple years ago who is the expert in making FDA compliance work for companies. And she had been working as a
Divya Nag, I believe
yes,
is her name.
Yes. And she had been working as a consultant with all kinds of companies to help them make sure that they're within FDA compliance and to get those companies through the compliance process in a successful way. So Apple hired her. So this is something that they have seen as something they need to address, and they went and found the expert and brought her on board. So my guess is that you're probably right, Dave, in that Apple chose to not deal with FDA-related issues right now because they didn't feel comfortable that the data they were collecting was going to be acceptable.
Yeah.
And so Apple Watch 2, whenever that comes out, that I'm betting is going to add in a little bit more health. And so when Apple gets that totally nailed down, then Apple Watch 3 is going to give us a little bit more, and we're going to work over a few years from a transition to a fitness-based Apple Watch to a health-based Apple Watch, and then we'll have like the iPad and iPad Mini, in a manner of speaking, because we'll have the health Apple Watch and the fitness Apple Watch.
I wonder if part of it isn't going to be Apple getting people used to wearing the watch the right way before they roll these features out, right? And I remember when I tried on the Apple Watch, they put it on me. I didn't put it on, right? And it was tight. And I immediately sorted out that that was so that the haptic feedback would work properly, right? So that I could feel it and I wasn't, you know, and I could feel it within 4 minutes, not, you know, a 40-minute, oh, well, let me try it a little tighter. Oh, yeah, okay, that's good, right? So they put it on intentionally tight to make sure that that worked and they could kind of pump people through and you know, get enough people to test the thing out. So I wonder if after a year of wearing an Apple Watch, everyone just gets used to the concept of, oh yeah, you've got to wear it tight so that the haptic feedback works. Well, now that you're wearing it tight enough so that works, suddenly the world opens up and maybe data collection gets a lot more consistent, right? And maybe there's 16 other things like that about how you wear the watch and, you know, when you wear it and you know, there's a lot of things that we do with our cars that we take for granted, right? But if you just took someone who had never worn or had never used a car to drive before, suddenly, you know, there's a lot of things that you go, oh, wait a minute, you know, you gotta learn a lot about this before you really want to turn it on. So yeah, I wonder if that's if we will see if it's more about training the users, right? Error between the chair and the keyboard, we call it with the computers.
Well, but that plus, you know, getting to understand just how users are using these things in the first place. Plus,
right, yeah, it's a two-way street. Yeah.
Plus, of course, ongoing development.
Right.
You know, better, faster, smaller, more accurate.
Right. And even if the whole thing about really training us how to properly wear an Apple Watch so you don't have a you're holding it wrong scenario.
Yeah.
Even if that wasn't part of the original plan, that becomes a lucky side effect of having to wait or deciding to wait to include a lot of the health tracking features in because if we are all consistently wearing the watches the way Apple needs us to so that they can include those sensors, well, now we're going to have, I'm assuming, at least a year for Apple to train us exactly how to wear the watch.
And we can avoid the sensor gate.
And we can avoid sensor... Oh, we can avoid sensor gate. Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, we are out of time. So, Dave, Brian, thank you so much for joining me. And Brian, I'm glad that you were able to keep a connection at least well enough so that you could participate in the show.
Yeah, the irony is I had a connection during the second half of the show, not when we were actually discussing my connection.
Well,
it's kind of fun.
But the great thing is you can go back and listen to the show.
Oh, it's awesome. Fantastic.
So you can hear the part you missed, which is the part, yay, that really matters for you.
We recorded it just for you.
Awesome. Thank you, folks.
We did. So thanks to both of you for being on the show. Thank you to lynda.com for being our sponsor this week. Go over to their website, lynda.com/TDO, and get your free 10-day trial and start learning more right away. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow.